right, before we get started with tonight's podcast, we got to give a shout out to our friends at Tavor.
Yeah, join Tavor for free and learn about the latest craft beer trends. Read humorous beer factoids that can be repurposed at parties to put standard beer nerds to shame.
And best of all, gain daily access to delicious, fresh craft beer you can't find anywhere else. Then have it delivered right to your doorstep. Visit Tavor.com today. Enter your email address and let the exciting world of craft beer into your life.
In fact, you can even get it a little bit cheaper by entering a special promo code WRONGSIDE10. It'll get you $10 off your first purchase of $25 or more.
Just check it out, Tavor.com, Tavor.com. All right, welcome in Wrong Side of the Pond. He is DJ Schweitzer. I'm Jeremy Lance. He's going to take that bottle to the neck there, buddy.
Soon.
We got a pod on tap for us here.
That's right. It's on cast as well.
It's on cast. Mm-hmm. Podcast.
There's on a pod tap. On cast for you. It's tapped and ready to come at you.
I guess now that I'm saying words wrong, we should get into the beer we're drinking.
Yeah, absolutely.
Explain away my problem.
Yeah, thanks to our good friends from Tavor, we've got a delicious beer, a coffee cream stout coming from Wildcard Brewing in Redding, California. Their reason for the season, quite delicious, nice and smooth. If you like a stout, it's an easy drinker.
And the temperature really just finally dipped here in the Midwest.
Yeah, that's right. There was legitimately frost on my car this morning when I got up, which was not cool.
Yeah.
Was not planning for that.
Budget in that extra 10 minutes to
did
warm
not.
Up the...
No, I did not.
Yeah,
so.
That'll get you.
But hey, winter is setting in. The football is coming thick and fast. Even though we're on international break, there's loads
thick and
to
fast.
Talk
there's
about.
Zero football that was played today here on a Monday where it's just a barren waste.
I'm just saying there's a lot of football stories that are kind of happening right now. It's not just... the football itself that's happening. It's there's, you know, obviously the international break and it was rather dull today as far as the actual action goes, but there were still lots of things happening. It felt like throughout the course of the day, teams are making signings domestically here in the USL. We saw that with the FC Cincinnati. So that for me was obviously first and foremost the front of my mind today.
But right, that was called you doing work.
Well, yes. Yeah. But
you're
I mean,
doing your job.
That's been happening a bit over the last few days within that league. So that,
hey, we're only like 6 weeks away from the January transfer window as well. So
yeah.
That whole player moving and, you know, coming and going, that's going to ratchet up here.
I feel like that
global.
Is so quick after like the start of the season. Like,
yeah.
It's barely into it. But
hey, but if you're a guy like, you know, Schweinsteiger... it couldn't come soon enough.
That's right.
You got to go.
That's right. Luckily, on this podcast, there's not any fantasy to get into.
No.
Because there is no EPL being played right now, that means there was no movement for either you or myself, which is usually good for both of us since we normally only move in the negative direction at this point.
We are terrible.
Yeah. But if you want a refresher at all,
okay.
I'm in 99th place. You're in 45th place. And James Thomas's Genius FC... is still sitting at the top of the pile. So there's your 30-second fantasy update, which allows us to get into the real stuff.
Yay! And it was the opposite of a fantasy. Up in Columbus, death to Dos Acero as it was the U.S. finally losing to Mexico on U.S. soil in a World Cup qualifier since, I believe, like the 70s.
Yeah, first time in a really, really long time. Can we start by saying this was bound to happen eventually, right? Like,
sure.
It was bound to happen. I don't know that this should have been the match that it happened in.
Well, let's look at this, though.
Okay.
What happened last week? What happened a lot over the last 2 weeks? The Cubs won the World Series.
That's true.
And a man with a questionable resume... is now the president and soon to be leader of the free world.
Yeah. So things that were unpredictable became the reality.
This is the year of the things that, quote unquote, will never happen, totally happening.
That's a good point.
Dos Acero was just the latest victim. This made sense. If it was going to happen at any point in time, why not in 2016, the craziest year ever?
Yeah, the year where everyone has literally died.
Yeah, we had some death.
Your aforementioned surprise presidential victory.
That definitely happened.
Yeah, that was surprising, to say the least.
We live in a bit of a different world than we did last week when we were potting.
It tastes different. Just in the air, it tastes different. And you're right. And I think the death of Dos Acero was predictable in that respect. It was the unpredictable thing, and that's exactly what came to fruition. But it felt like, hey, we needed something else, right? And I think, I don't know, this time it seemed like this was the one that it was going to trip up on.
You know what? I knew they were going to lose, though.
Why is that?
Let me tell you why. And let me measure my words here, because I appreciate these people. You got to hang out with them a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
The TIFO game had a different tone to it. TIFO Sweat had a different tone to it this year. Past couple years, the U.S. Has hosted matches at Columbus. It's been about heart, home, just good Midwestern love.
Mm-hmm.
What was the TIFO this year?
A little braggadig.
Welcome to your nightmare with Christian Pulisic rocking the Dos Acero with his hands.
That's right.
It was a bit of a spiking the football.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh no. Pride cometh before the fall. We are hosed. We're going to lose this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I didn't think about it at the time, mainly because I had
It was right in front of your face?
It's mainly because I had to pee so bad that my mind was essentially erased. The lines were unbelievable, and I was really using all of my brain power not to wet myself at that point, which gives you a little insight into what my day had been like.
You just pissed in the trash can?
You
wouldn't have been the only one, though. Like,
no.
Let's be honest with ourselves.
No, I did not do that.
Sinks.
I may have gone into the women's restroom. Gone in.
Did they not have a line?
There was no line at all for them.
What?
Not only that, I went in the exit. So,
there you go.
Yeah. Maybe that's not something we should be admitting on the podcast.
You just did.
Yeah.
I'm not erasing it.
Yeah. All right. It's now.
Oh, hey. Yeah. Well, let's go down this road we're going now.
Okay.
Spiking the football. There was a, I don't know, there was a vibe that said this is going to go poorly.
Well, when you heard about U.S. soccer, like, trying to trademark the whole idea of Dos Acero a while ago, and, like...
But that wasn't too surprising, right?
No, it's not, but it's one of those things
U.S.
where,
soccer, a.k.a. Nike, looking to make a buck? Shocking.
But it's like setting the stage for something like this to happen, right? Where we're just claiming that this is the thing that we do, and like it had all the recipe for this to turn out the way that it did. I guess earlier when I said like it didn't feel like it should have happened, maybe it was more along the lines of like I didn't feel like it should have happened from like a player standpoint. Like Mexico weren't a team that I necessarily think was better than us. Like, especially to the point where they would win. But maybe it was like, maybe if we'd made better tactical decisions, this wouldn't have unfolded the way that it should, or that it did. Does that make sense?
Well, yeah, I mean, we'll get into the tactical apocalypse that happened in a second.
Yeah.
I totally get what you're saying there. Let's backtrack though for a second.
Okay.
You actually went up there.
I did.
How was your experience?
It was good. Went up in a night early. Was able to do a great appearance on our friends who you alluded to a little bit earlier. Aces Radio. Some of those guys are involved in the TIFO Sweat efforts up in Columbus whenever their games hosted up that way. But they were kind enough to do a segment with me. We talked a bit about our podcast, about the website. My time with FC Cincinnati was a really, really fun segment to get to do with them. I also bestowed FC Cincinnati gifts to them. They're all Crew fans, so they all really enjoyed that. But that was fun.
Wait, did they actually enjoy that? I feel like...
They laughed.
They're like, hey, thanks for that gift. And then they're like, what am I going
to
do?
What am I going to do with this? Now I have to actually dispose of this in a way that... Yeah. No one's going to catch me doing, so I don't get in trouble.
And what am I going to do with it for the rest of this evening?
Yeah. But that was fun. Then the next day, obviously, there's lots of tailgating, lots of people to catch up with. All sorts of things, different, you know, items going on. Met up with a couple different people over the course of the few days that I was there. So for those of you who did that, if you're listening, thanks very much for that. But there was that small matter of the game itself to contend with. But I'm going to say this much about the day, the night before, everything in general. Holy crap, was it cold.
Yeah.
The last couple Dosiceros, the last couple U.S.-Mexico games that there have been very enjoyable temperate experiences.
I would disagree. Last Dosisera was like 100 degrees outside. We all died.
Compared to this.
I ran out of, there was no moisture in my body and I seized up driving on the highway and leaving that place.
That's right. I forgot about that. But I would take that stifling heat to the crippling cold that we dealt with at this particular game.
This is why we're two different people.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. Maybe it's when you stand outside for like a net 6 hours over the course of the day, where temperatures are fluctuating really no higher than like the upper 40s.
Well, that's why you have to cycle in some liquor there, just kind of warm the cockles.
Who says I didn't?
Well, apparently it didn't work.
Well,
because you were freezing.
Apparently not enough of it. But no, it was really, really cold. If there's like one thing I'm going to remember more than anything about this match is going to be like how cold my extremities were, even though I felt like I was pretty prepared for it. So, yeah, but the game itself, as we kind of alluded to earlier, was just a mess in a lot of different respects, but really entertaining in some of the other ones.
Real quickly, though, the atmosphere, the vibe. I know there was a lot of people that were a little skittish.
Mm-hmm.
I think without much merit, that they were. There was a lot of national media skittish that we could be some international incidents.
Yeah.
From this game.
Yeah. I'll throw myself into the group that was maybe a little skittish on that front. I don't know that I was like necessarily concerned that something was more likely to happen because of the election results. I do think that was like an extra tension that wasn't normally there. Like, it's already a match that's different. I had a discussion with some friends online the other day a bit about like, you know, this is a different rivalry match than your Ohio State Michigan games, your Pittsburgh Steelers Cincinnati Bengals games, any, you know, whatever your professional sports rivalry is. I'm sure it's really intense, and I'm not trying to like discredit that at all, but there's a lot of extra like stuff that's involved in this whole U.S.-Mexico affair, right? And a lot of it's socio-political, right? Like, you look at the relationship between the two countries. Then there's the whole racial aspect of it, of, you know, Americans and Mexicans and the whole South Park, they took our jobs, like, mentality that a lot of Americans have about them.
But the actual fans that show up to this match.
There are always fights, right? And that's bound to happen in any sporting event.
Any soccer event, no matter who's playing.
But the difference is that I'm saying here is, like, the Trump election maybe was just a little extra, like, it just put everyone a little bit more on edge, or maybe a little bit more on alert. And I talked to a couple Mexican – I actually, like, sought people out because I wanted to get opinions on this while I was up there. Like, hey, well, you know, what were your feelings ahead of coming out here for this match? And for the most part, everyone's like, it's going to be fine. It's not going to be that big of a deal. But you would get every, you know, handful of times you'd ask someone. Someone would bring up essentially the idea of, like, I was a little nervous. Like, I'm looking over my shoulder a little bit more than I used to.
See, I would feel like from an American perspective, there's a lot of people there looking to clear their name, you know? Looking to be over the top nice and polite to the Mexican fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there was definitely some of that. And there was this sentiment, too, that was kind of being oozed forth by all the involved parties, like U.S. soccer and the Mexican players all posed together before the match itself. American Outlaws put out statements, you know, hey, we're an inclusive, you know, organization. You know, no matter where you come from, we're here to support the national team and be good hosts. But I think the fact that all those things were done kind of adds credence to this whole idea that, like, hey, like, everyone was aware that, like, maybe a little extra smoothing wouldn't hurt anything in this particular scenario.
Interesting. That's a very different reading than I thought it was.
Well, it's one of those, like, I don't recall them doing things like this ahead of previous U.S.-Mexico games.
I just don't think they cared.
What's the difference between this one and the previous one?
Because there is the national media buzz of, hey, this could be – this is going to be an incident.
I don't know that anyone necessarily thought it was going to be an incident, but it seemed more likely in this scenario than it did in previous scenarios. So was it overblown? Probably so. But I get why everyone had that feeling. And the idea that the organizations were putting out their own kind of like, hey, let's all be cool beforehand kind of speaks to the idea that we weren't the only ones that were kind of having that trepidation. That was, maybe official channels were too.
That might have just been covering your butt.
Never hurts to cover your butt. Never hurts. All right,
let's get into the actual match.
Sure. Let's start with a simple one, right? Three in the back.
Hey, how about that?
What the hell? What the hell? Why are we doing that? Jeff Cameron wasn't even in the squad.
No.
And you decided to go three at the back.
Which, you know, given what we just talked about, was probably a good idea.
What?
That Jeff Cameron wasn't in the squad.
No, what? No, no. It wasn't. That was the joke.
Yeah. Fairly vocal Trump supporter on Twitter.
Yeah, right. If there's anyone that's willing to dip their toes from the U.S. soccer community into politics, it is most definitely Jeff Cameron. Here's hoping this just means that he's going to put together a future political run. Can you see him? He could be the Curt Schilling of American soccer.
That's what we need. We need more Curt Schilling.
We really do.
That's what we're all screaming for.
Seems like he's screaming the same way that Schilling does.
So three at the back. When you first saw that lineup, what was your initial thought?
My initial thought was, holy crap, Pulisic's playing the 10.
Like, yeah.
That was my initial thought. And then I was like, holy crap, he's wearing 10. That's even more incredible.
Yeah.
That was my initial thought. My second thought was,
why do I count three center backs?
Wait, why are we playing three? Oh my God, we're playing three in the back. Welp, we're going to lose this one. I think that was literally, it was Pulisic. Oh my God, there's three in the back. Oh my God, we're going to lose this game. that was my exact train of thought. And so we get up there and it was really cool to see Pulisic out there, and he's lining up in this really central role, and it kind of gave the crowd a bit of an energy to it. And then within minutes, everything that you feared about them playing through the back was coming to fruition. literally bum rushing forward. I don't know that I've ever seen the U.S. against someone that I consider fairly equal opposition get rolled over the way that they absolutely got rolled over in that opening.
Now, what do you think? So three at the back, but I think the real interesting thing was just from we're going to do the three at the back thing.
Mm-hmm.
You picked three guys that have no pace within the three of them.
Yeah.
Someone's got to be able to move around there.
Yeah. The other really puzzling thing was DeAndre Yedlin being left on a bench for a formation that's practically suited to him.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you play him in that speedy right back position that Tammy Chandler was apparently playing in? And this was one of those things in the post-game press conference. They asked him, why was Yedlin not starting? And he said, well, he's playing in the championship. And so he slipped down a level, and Chandler's first choice now because he's playing at a higher level. Wait a minute. He's getting regular minutes in Europe just like you told him to do. And he's playing on a team that's one of the best attacking sides in the championship, literally in a formation that's built around what you're – trying to play tonight. This doesn't make any sense at all.
Yeah, the game-winning assist, 6 days ago. What are you doing?
So it was everything about the positional selections, the actual formation itself.
Well, yeah, just why would you pick USA-Mexico in the hexagonal? Hey, this is when we're going to roll out a different formation that we've not done in at least 2 years.
And only once before, for that matter. So,
and it didn't work then either.
No,
that was what you had Jermaine Jones anchoring.
Oh,
that.
God, I forgot about that. Oh. Yeah.
Why then? Is this Klinsmann just trying to outthink the room?
Yes, I think it has to be that because honestly, they didn't play this at all in the Gold Cup. The Copa Centenario. And everyone kind of was like, oh, this is a redeeming tournament for Klinsmann. He's kind of overperformed. He did better than people expected him to. He played back to this more traditional formation for the team. Maybe we're finally making headway. And it's almost like he came out as like, we got to go real tactics on this one and switch it all up. And it's like he overcompensated for how much he had to play pragmatically in that previous tournament.
I never wanted so badly to debate all match, as we normally always have to, who should be playing left back.
Yeah.
If only. I mean, he found a way to get around the question mark that has been for years, who plays left back, by
just not
having one.
Yeah, we don't need to do that. Don't need to do that at all. So, Fabian Johnson ultimately ended up there, but it was one of those, like, what is legitimately happening? Like, you look at the pieces you have available, and you go, okay, and then you see the lineup, and you go, weird, like, if you're going to play this lineup, you're not using the pieces that you have at your disposal, probably in the most effective manner. Like, why would you play three in the back without Jeff Cameron? If you are going to play three in the back, why the hell wouldn't you have Speedy Yedlin playing on the wing?
Right.
Like, these are simple things to me that seem very contradictory to the thought process that happened there.
Let's move to the other part you mentioned, and that's Pulisic playing in that number 10 role. I didn't like it.
No.
He couldn't find space.
No.
I think he's much better out on the wing.
Well, I mean, it was characteristic of a team that's not used to playing with five in the midfield.
Yeah.
And you expect a guy, again, who doesn't play in a team that has five in the midfield, to suddenly come up with all this space in a really overcrowded area.
Yeah, he struggled to do anything with the ball.
Much more effective, too, once he got into a wide position where he's kind of been blooming. So,
and while we're talking about players in a wide position, so is Darlington Nagme just not part of the, like, what's happening here? Why was he not selected to be at least part of
the roster? This goes back to him turning down the last national team call-up. Supposedly because he doesn't feel like he's in Klinsmann's plans at all.
Timmy Chandler turned down how many?
Yeah, I'm not saying that I agree with it. I'm just saying that it's happening. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's really puzzling. That seems like a formation that would be a lot more suitable to a player of his talents. And yet we didn't have a player of his talents playing out there. How about Michael Bradley, again, being forced into a creative role higher up the field?
Yay. Where
he actually has said out loud that he doesn't prefer to play.
What about the fact that it took, apparently, Bradley and at least one other player literally having to beg Klinsmann to change the formation?
Yeah, so this went down supposedly... when Guardado went down, I think it was like 27, 28th minute, somewhere in that time frame. And Bradley, and I want to say it was Jones even, went over and pled with Klinsmann, like, yeah, can we change the formation? And he did. And I agree with you, like, it was the right idea.
But why does it take the players to have to?
Exactly. Exactly. What is happening in that scenario where Klinsmann's not saying to himself at that point,
like, why are you sitting on your hands? Why do your players have to come to you and tell you this?
So, it was super puzzling. The whole evening was really puzzling.
It's just a bad scene. Mexico scores first.
Mm-hmm. It hit the post twice outside of that opening goal as well.
Yeah. It could have been 3-0 in a hurry.
Yeah, I mean, within 20 minutes, 25 minutes, it could have easily been 3-0. That injury allowed them to make that change. Then they were, I don't want to say they were better.
They just looked competent.
They improved from where they had previously been. And then in the second half, they actually looked a competent side and probably had it within their rights to win it as well.
Yeah. Big game, Bob. Bobby Wood scores. Mm-hmm. This is the second time he scored against Mexico. They went off to lose both of those games.
Yeah, really alert play by him, too, to get that tap in that particular scenario. Not necessarily the prettiest of goals, but it's one of those ones that – those are the type of goals that win you points and get you results in big matches. And he was unlucky not to find one again not too long after that.
Tim Howard. Did he just play the last minutes of his – U.S. career?
Because
he's going to be out for considerable time. I mean, he's not going to be healthy till, like, literally, you know, what we got games, next in March, mm-hmm, right? That's about, like, when he's going to be allegedly back.
Yeah. I hate to see good players,
especially like that,
marginalized and go down injury-wise, but... I don't know. Timmy's not been doing it for me the last few times out that I've seen him play. Not that he played poorly in the limited minutes he got in this match, but I wouldn't be shocked if this is the last time. But hey, this is Klinsmann we're talking about. We could literally see anything unfold here.
So let's go to this year real quickly. I did want to point out. So this, I found this little tidbit interesting. TV ratings came out.
Mm-hmm.
Total 5.2 million viewers.
Okay.
But how about this breakdown? I didn't know it was still this big of a chasm between the two channels. Fox Sports 1 had 1.2 million viewers.
Holy crap.
Univision had 4 million viewers.
Holy crap.
Yeah. I did not know that the scale was still that far tilted.
Yeah. You can probably tell, and I, you know, obviously wasn't there to watch the game, but you look at a majority of the advertisings, even on Fox, and it's skewed towards a Hispanic audience in its own right as well. So maybe that's a little bit of an indication of the demos that they're actually expecting to pull in those scenarios. Maybe they live in an area that doesn't necessarily have a Spanish language offering easily accessible, like, I don't know, Cincinnati, Ohio. So, that is pretty incredible to see that gulf is still that large.
So as you're listening to this on Tuesday, we are counting down the hours here till they play in Costa Rica.
That's right.
This match now means a lot more than it should.
Mm-hmm. Not the easiest of starts to the hex either, right?
No, not really.
Mexico at home, then away to the second best team in the region outside of our own. So, not ideal by any stretch.
So what if they go down there and get whooped 2-0, 3-0?
I think.
What if? I mean, they got to win this, right?
I don't know that they need to win it. I think they need a point at bare minimum, and it needs to be one of those like convincing draws too, where you're like, "Oh man, that was scrappy and it showed a lot of heart." But it can't be one where they like go up and then surrender like a crap, you know, equalizer late on.
Mm-hmm.
It almost has to be something where they show themselves to be a competent side in some capacity, be it a win or at least a point.
So all this conversation obviously alludes to one clear question.
Yeah.
Klinsmann?
Well.
What hour is it in his career?
So I'll say this much. When I was tweeting out what the topics were going to be, I put the hashtags in it. One, of course, to get a little bit more exposure. But two, to kind of feel out what the actual conversation looks like around that.
What the vibe is.
I was surprised to see that it didn't finish typing itself out for me. Like, if you're going to use a hashtag that's frequently used, Twitter will most often populate it for you. They'll go ahead and finish it. So that way you use the correct one and so you don't misspell it and you're actually communicating with the audience you want to. But even more so when you click into it, there just wasn't that much action there. So I was surprised given
how... It was weird. It tried to autocorrect it. It's still to LVG out.
Yeah, that didn't quite fit the scenario here, autocorrect. But for a movement or an idea that seems to have a lot of support within U.S. soccer circles, I was surprised to see how little traction there was online for it.
Is it almost as if the Klinsmann out crowd has just exhausted themselves? And
maybe.
They're just like, you know what? I think we all feel the same way by now.
Can't the promotion and relegation people get that way?
I don't know.
Apparently not. I think we know the answer to that, but maybe that's what they're doing. I don't know if that's exactly it. Maybe it's people don't necessarily believe it as much as we think they do. I'm not really sure, but I do feel like it is a topic that is open for discussion so much so that Sunil Gulati had to address it after the match. And he's actually said outright.
Well, he had to address it because he was asked point blank.
Well, yes.
Is there a change a coming?
But he outright said, like, no, we're sticking with him all the way through the World Cup, or at least through the hex. It was interesting that he didn't necessarily say all the way through the World Cup. Maybe they would feel like they could make a change then. But I don't know. Do you think it's something that will actually happen?
I think this is the first time I've really seen a scenario present itself where this could come off the rails pretty quickly.
They lose
Friday, obviously. Mm-hmm. Not a match they want to be losing, a match that they had kind of reclaimed after decades of just struggling to do anything against Mexico. They finally had found this foothold and being able to beat them at home, and especially in Columbus. They don't do that. They go to Costa Rica. Let's say they just they get pantsed. They lose 2-0, 3-0.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know who they have next, but let's just say they get a draw.
Right.
And then, boom, you have 1 point in the hex through three matches. Rutrow.
I mean, that would also be presuming that he would pull the trigger on Klinsmann mid-international break. You feel like they get the whole break and then they're dispatched of. So,
sure, okay. So he gets the whole break.
But, I mean, I think you see him take anything less than 4 points from that next round.
Right.
And you're talking about real jeopardy about whether or not you can actually make it through the hex itself. You're 4 of 10 games at that point.
Right.
That's tricky territory, you know.
Because then after that, you go into – also, you kind of go – you lead into that summertime, that off season for the clubs around the world where there's going to be guys moving around. Managers are available.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, it's I feel like this is the first time where I'm actually like, yeah, I'm with you guys. Like I'm okay. Let's actually change the direction here now, because we can't get too far into the cycle before making that change.
Right.
Because it's tough enough for a new manager to come in and have any sort of impact. But it's not to say either that I don't think like Klinsmann hasn't had his impact. I feel like he's been impactful for the program on the whole, you know, brought in this new data analytics look and revolutionized the fitness they're using, systematic improvements to the youth setup, all those kind of things. Those have all happened. But I just don't know that he can get the first team any further. I just don't know that that's in his capability or skill set. And it's kind of the exact same thing that we saw in Germany.
Yeah.
He did all these other things or the periphery great, but then the actual execution, the tactics, the team selections, it was Yogi Löw that was doing it most of the time. And then once Klinsmann was gone, Yogi Löw's turned Germany into a juggernaut. So you just wonder, like, is that what's necessary? Is that the next step in the Klinsmann cycle?
Yeah, I don't know. Let's whip around the rest of the World Cup qualifiers.
Okay.
Let's start actually with the match that we actually have on the TV right now. Mm-hmm. Argentina in a bit of trouble.
Yes.
They lose to Brazil 3-0.
Comprehensive loss, by the way.
Yeah, and that caps off 4 matches in qualifying in a row without a win.
Yikes.
They currently sit in 6th place with 7 to play. So it's still early on.
Mm-hmm.
7 more to play. And you get the 4.5 spots. So 5th place would go into a tiebreaker game.
Yeah, and I think that's with Oceania. So, yeah. I mean, it's a winnable one for them. But, yeah, loads of trouble. And it's the odd thing is if you go into this match, in particular against Brazil, if you pay attention to what's been going on in Argentina, people have been flipping out a little bit about their World Cup qualifying campaign. But you would think, almost on the whole, that Brazil are probably in like a worse scenario. They've had all this bad luck at major tournaments and, you know, didn't have the best qualifying campaign, you know, themselves and previous run-ins. But suddenly, you know, it was like a one-man team of Neymar, and suddenly they're undoing Argentina on home soil and really kind of showing them what they're capable of doing. And Neymar was just spectacular in this match. He's a guy that's clearly inspired at this point. But Argentina definitely in a bit of shambles. And if there's anyone that's in danger of missing a World Cup, it's most definitely those guys.
Over to Europe, where things are going well for England.
Yeah.
Nice 3-1 or 3-0 thrashing of Scotland. Southgate sounds like he's going to be offered the job this week.
Yeah, probably. This is England in qualifying though. Like they're typically, they're
well
one of two things. They're either absolutely atrocious or they just absolutely destroy all competition that they come across in qualifying.
It's really yet to, ever translate in the last, several decades into being any good in tournaments.
Yeah, that's right.
Let's go down a quick little rundown of small country crap kickings of the week.
Yes.
Venezuela beat Bolivia 5-0.
Yikes.
Over in Europe, Germany 8, San Marino 0, and Belgium got over large on Estonia 8-1. Roberto Martinez got himself a pretty nice squad there.
Yeah.
And they're playing well.
Well, I mean...
But isn't that a squad, like, shouldn't anybody be able to get that talented of a side to play well?
Yeah, pretty much. I'm sure you and I could walk in there and probably manage an 8-1 win over one of Europe's minnows.
And the funny thing is, the praise coming out of the Belgium camp is not, hey, this Martinez guy is just amazing.
Yeah.
It's all about, hey, Thierry Henry is really great to have in camp.
Yeah. Seems to be, I mean, a guy that the players tend to get along well with.
Eden Hazard was talking about how he's learning a lot from him.
Mm-hmm. So definitely someone that has a lot to contribute to the game. And not at all surprising to see that he's having that impact. Wouldn't be too surprised at all to see maybe soon-ish him actually taking the reins of a first-team job. So that's my prediction. I would say within a year, we see Thierry Henry actually taking a job of consequence.
The Red Bulls?
Maybe. It's a possibility. Speaking of two crap teams that were taking place, two of them played one another.
Yes.
Yeah. Cyprus and Gibraltar.
Yeah.
Won a hazardous scoreline there.
You know, I remember seeing it, and it was, I'm going to say Gibraltar is going to chalk it up as a victory, even though they lost.
Yeah, they definitely
lost. I'll say it was like 3-1 or 2-1.
Yeah, it was 3-1 to Cyprus.
Yeah, that's pretty good for them.
Yeah.
Gibraltar is generally on the side of a... on the losing side of a snowman every time.
Yeah, most likely. And Cyprus usually aren't too far behind them. Half snowmen are usual for them. So European qualifying is well underway. Definitely, we'll hit back on that earlier Germany San Marino match here shortly as we get back to winners and wankers.
Let's go on to the domestic side, but first...
All right, the first half of the pod is done, but we need to take a quick break to thank again our friends from Tavor.com.
Tavor is the craft beer pioneer everyone's talking about. This innovative service bridges the gap between craft beer fans and cutting-edge independent breweries from all around the country.
You can sign up for free and gain daily access to an extensive, highly curated selection of fresh craft beer that you can't find anywhere else and have it delivered right to your door. Join for free by visiting Tavor.com and entering your email address. Let the exciting world of craft beer into your life.
And for our listeners, we have a deal for you. Enter promo code WRONGSIDE10. You'll get $10 off your first order of $25 or more. All right, it was the second division championship.
That's right, the NASL championship.
NASL, yeah.
AKA the Soccer Bowl. I wish they'd just stick with the Soccer Bowl.
Why did they lose Soccer Bowl?
I don't know. I wonder if it's a trademark thing. Maybe they don't own... I can't imagine that's the case.
That's the one trademark from the old NASL they couldn't get?
I don't know, but...
They managed to get every other trademark.
I feel like they called it the Soccer Bowl the first few years it was back. And
they
now
definitely
did. Now they've abandoned it. It's more expressively being called the NASL Championship now. So
That is a great ring to
it. It's the Soccer Bowl for me. Always will be.
I mean, it's like the... college football. Now it's the college football playoffs. Great name, guys.
Yeah.
Real creative.
Thought about that one for a long time. Hey, what should we do here? But the championship was played in New York this past weekend between New York Cosmos and Indy 11. Indy 11 putting together a great season overall. They were the spring season champions. Finished near the top of the pack, I believe, in the fall as well. And made it through to the playoffs after downing Edmonton, memory serves me right.
You are correct, sir.
Yeah. So they're into the final. Cosmos making it back for the second year running. They are the defending champs, of course. This thing went to 120 minutes of scoreless soccer.
Yeah.
Just the type of championship game every league's looking for.
We all want that. Mm-hmm. It was the Cosmos prevailing 4-2 on penalties. This Cosmos side, they're a little more likable than they were last year when they had like Raul and one other. What was the other big name they had?
Marcos Sena.
That sounds right.
Yeah, Marco Senna.
Yeah. So they didn't have those two.
Yeah, they don't have the big names that they've had in years past.
Mainly, I mean, two of their starters are Columbus Crew castoffs.
Yeah, I saw that Jairo Arrieta was one of the players. Yeah,
Moffitt.
And Moffitt, both former Crew players in there. Ryan Richter, the guy who was on the losing end last year for Ottawa, he scored the winning penalty 4-2. If you're looking for an oddity, by the way.
Is that the guy with the big hair?
Yeah, I think so. If you're looking for an oddity, however, in this penalty shootout, it was the fact that third up for Indy 11 was their goalkeeper, John Bush.
Why would you do that? The man's wearing pants.
Goalkeeper. Going third in your penalty shootout.
In pants.
Do I need to tell you that he missed the penalty?
I just assumed it.
Put it over top of the bar. It's one of those things that comes off really bold, and if you pull it off, you don't look like a fool. But if you do,
well, if you pull it off, there's some you win a little bit of a mind game, right?
Yeah, you're like, ooh, man, I can't believe that just unfolded. But if it doesn't work out, it's kind of like, ooh,
we just gave you a round in the shootout.
Yeah, not the best way to approach it. So congrats to the Cosmos, back-to-back winners. We did get a question in this week. And that question did come from Matt Morris over Twitter. Matt asks, if the worst was to happen to NASL, where do you see the remaining clubs going? So
we now officially jump into a very interesting offseason for the NASL.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, the question becomes like, is this the last NASL championship? I don't think that's the case at all. I think at bare minimum you're going to see one next year.
Yeah, it looks like they are full steam ahead as far as 2017 season.
Yeah. As far as like, what do I ultimately see happening? Look, I can't at all say. I don't necessarily want the league in any capacity to go under. We've talked about this before. I think it would be a bad thing for U.S. soccer on the whole for the league to do that. If that were to happen, I guess that's a question that's worth analyzing. Where do most of these teams land? Well, I think there's an obvious answer, and that's USL.
Yeah.
How many of those teams would choose to do that is an entirely different question.
Yeah, you may sadly see, if this does happen, you may see a side or two just cut their losses. And fade off with the league.
I think the biggest question mark hangs over the current champions of that league, and that's the Cosmos, who were vehemently opposed to going the USL direction and were one of the main instigators in the league actually existing today to begin with.
Yeah, and a side that has definitely sees themselves as more than USL,
mm-hmm.
and in some cases they feel themselves equal to an MLS side. So, yeah, I don't know. They're really the real question mark. I think a side like an Indy 11 or a Jacksonville could easily make that transition over to the USL with ease.
Right.
I think it comes to the two heritage brands, the Cosmos, who are above it, and Fort Lauderdale, who, no money.
Yeah. So there's a lot up in the air, obviously, with that league. Where all that lands this offseason, we will all be watching very intently. There's been news out of the league office that Sunil Gulati's out of the Federation office, that he's met with Bill Peterson and Jake Edwards from the USL, that there have been some productive talks.
Hold on now. And I don't want to make you talk out of turn here as someone who works within USL, but I don't see what, like, Jake Edwards comes to the table outside of him not wanting to jeopardize their chance at becoming D2. I don't see how he comes to the table and doesn't really have all the leverage.
Again, I don't know.
His league is not floundering.
No.
His league is not shrinking. What is it that NASL... really could say that he's like, oh, well, we totally got to do that. Like,
I think
he holds all the cards in a lot of ways. I think the USL does. They're the one that's outperforming the other one.
I'm not saying that one league does or doesn't have more. I think it's pretty obvious which league is in a better position at the moment. I think there's a lot of different ways that Sunil's comments about productive conversations between the two leagues could be read. Maybe he's talking about, you know, Division II designations. Maybe he's talking about a coexistence of some sort. Maybe he's talking about just better working relationship between the groups. Who knows what that actually means? Until we get more details, until we know more about what's happening with all this, it's all speculative. I think there's writing that's on the wall, and we can try to our best to interpret what's happening with that writing on the wall at this point. But I think there are a lot of variables that still really need to be shaken out before anyone can say definitively, here's what NSL's fate looks like, here's what USL's fate looks like, and here's where all these clubs are going to land.
Push comes to shove. Mm-hmm. Do you think that NASL might have to look at the magic bullet, as some would call it, to save the relevancy?
I mean, they've talked on multiple occasions about it being something they're interested in pursuing, and I think they've even done it recently.
I mean, that might be the Hail Mary.
If they make a go of it alone, I think that is the Hail Mary. How they do that with the number of teams they currently have at their disposal.
Yeah. You'd have to figure out what you're doing there. You would have to try to bring in some other teams. I could see them going to a Detroit City and some of the more successful fourth division sides and trying to coax them into making the move. Maybe, who knows, maybe here in a year or so, if, you know, cities that feel that they're entitled to moving up to different levels from USL feel spurned by that situation, maybe like a St. Louis or something, maybe they look for a different option.
Yeah, look, I think these are all possibilities, right? But how quickly can you get a setup put together like that? How quickly can you elevate semi-professional teams, the professional teams that are capable of surviving that type of disruptive of a force that quickly? I mean, these are a lot of the same questions we ask.
Right.
We ask of the movement in general, and I think they become hypersensitive in a league that's currently unstable. So, look, I think there's a lot still to be decided about the future of all of these lower division leagues, and I don't think anyone on the outside really has enough information. Shoot, even those of us on the inside have enough information to say it's going to tilt one way or another at this point.
We did have our question of the week.
Yeah, we did. So this question came from you, and it harkens back to our discussion earlier about USA-Mexico and how it's one of those, like, must-see matches of U.S. soccer. Like, if you were telling someone, like, you were trying to experience the best American soccer had to offer – as far as like a climate, a game that you would want to go watch, US-Mexico would easily be number one or two, maybe three at most on just about everyone's list. And your question that you posed everyone was, what other games do you consider to be these kind of like must-see matches that are out there? Like, and we didn't necessarily define it as it had to be like American soccer or world soccer. It could be whatever we wanted.
Yeah. Whatever you felt made sense to you.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Let's start with yours. I mean, do you have one that's like, hey, must see event?
I mean, we talked to him a minute ago about US-Mexico. Obviously, I'd rate that pretty highly. From a like a pure like fan standpoint, for me, I would almost have to put it at Tottenham Arsenal. Like the North London Derby for me is like
sure.
The preeminent match. I've never had the privilege of watching one in person, but there's no match that puts me on edge like a Tottenham Arsenal match does. So for me, that would probably be the absolute pinnacle match that I would want to watch.
Yeah. I would say, you know, I think that's always the easy and correct way to go is like just, you know, your side's, you know, their biggest match of the year to go to that. Absolutely. I think from a domestic standpoint and one that I've experienced and I think is, you know, I've always been in defense of and I feel is very underrated. And I think if you're a fan in the U.S., you need to go for it because I think it's just a fun overall experience. And that's the MLS All-Star Game. Mm. I think it's a great... I've done it twice now.
Right.
07 and 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's fun, especially, I mean, obviously both of those times Chelsea were the opponent, so obviously there's that added bonus for me, but you get a chance to, you know, I think our man Jason Davis always jokingly refers to it as like soccer convention.
Yeah.
It kind of is. Like, it's a big coming together of American soccer fans, just like USA Mexico is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's generally a multi-day thing. There's stuff going on around it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so the match doesn't mean a whole lot, but it's still a fun match. You get to say that you've been able to see a lot of big names, especially domestically, play in front of your very eyes. Yeah, I'm a fan of it.
Yeah.
I've had amazing experiences both times I've gone.
Yeah, I've been to three and could absolutely echo your sentiments. It is one of the most fun games in American soccer to go to, especially since there's nothing actually riding on it.
It's really just a party.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's a celebration of what American soccer actually can achieve. We did get a couple other people who put forth their own predictions or their own personal recommendations. Brian BTS on Twitter, he says U.S. wise, he thinks the MLS Cup finals and the College Cup final, two kind of traditional finals as far as American soccer goes. Those are big ones. Worldwide, he suggested things like El Clasico between Barcelona and Real Madrid, which we're ironically watching an advertisement for literally right this second. The UEFA Champions League final, and then a World Cup final. So some of the more predictable ones, I would say, but all certainly matches that just about everyone would want to catch a little bit. Gage Magoto, our longtime listener, frequent participant
in
the
podcast.
Did
you end up getting to see him?
I did not.
Oh.
I did not. I wasn't quite as mobile once the drinking started.
That generally is the case.
Yeah. Our good friends from Rheinhaus rented a bus to bring up there to cart people up there.
Oh, yeah.
And it did a fabulous job of blocking the wind. And I just was really against the idea of leaving the side of the bus.
It's pretty flat up there.
Especially in that parking lot. Gage, though, offered up, if we're going in the U.S., he would love to go to a Portland-Seattle game. I think as far as MLS rivalry games go right now, that's probably the best one. If I had to put my own spin on that, I'd probably say I'd want to watch.
I don't know. Trillium Cup's pretty legit.
I'd say I would want to watch that Portland-Seattle game in Portland if I were having to choose
one of the two. That would be the place I'd pick.
He also threw out there, though, the New York City FC versus Red Bulls at Yankee Stadium. Maybe you get a sandwich board tossed at you if you go to travel that one.
Who are you?
Outside the U.S., he also offered up El Clasico, the Old Firm, Man United, Liverpool, Dortmund, Schalke. He could go on. Our good buddy Carlos Mojica, he offered up a great alternative thought. You know, everyone's offering up these really big matches. He says any U.S. Open Cup match, particularly when it's a team you support, some of the best matches in the U.S. take place there. The atmosphere is often nuts. Having been to U.S. Open Cup matches for teams above and below the top tiers here, I would absolutely agree with Carlos. They are really, really fun. The lower league teams are always really up for it.
Ask Eddie Gavin.
That's the second time I've been on a podcast this week where that specific incident's been brought up. Weird. So we got some good ones there. Radio MLS offers up, first one to bring this up, kind of surprising, Boca Juniors River Plate, the Super Classico down in Argentina. Definitely a great one. Abide 2. He offers up in Ohio the FC Cincinnati Crew SC Derby, a match that's not actually taken place yet.
Almost did. Could get past those ratties.
Also saw a shout for Bayern and Dortmund. And Josh Patterson, another longtime friend of the podcast, he offered up the Hell's Real Derby as well. So a second vote for a match that has literally never taken place.
We're going with that. That's the name, huh? We're going with that one? We're sticking with that?
It seems to have got some traction at this point. So, official club referred names for derbies, I think it'll be a hard sell. But as far as the fans go, I think that would be just fine.
That's fine.
So
I'm good with what the fans want
to
do.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks to all of our listeners out there. We did get one late one in from Matt Morris. He offered up a Real Salt Lake Sporting KC match. Those often get a little chippy, so not a bad one either. But thanks,
you would
everyone.
You'd want it at KC, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All the...
The Blue Hell or whatever that is?
Yeah, something along those lines. But the Cauldron does bring it. Just seems all the people in Salt Lake, just they're too nice for that.
No. Yeah. And then beer is only 3.5% alcohol.
That's a little knock on it. But thanks for everyone who submitted their answers to the question this week. As always, we really appreciate it.
Winners and wankers.
Winners and wankers. Do you want to get us started?
My winner, Francisco Rivera of FS1. During the match there, obviously you mentioned it was a bit brisk outside, and he was man enough and big enough of a G to rock on air white furry earmuffs during the whole match anytime he had to do a stand-up. My man.
I mean, credit to him for knowing what he was doing full well.
Oh, yeah.
And being like, yeah, I'm going to wear these.
He's going for it.
I mean, it takes some balls.
I love it. I admire that kind of stuff.
I know you do. You're really a big fan of it. This coming from the guy who wanted us to wear blazers to at least one of the games that we called together for the Saints. The last season, mind you, we did this. It was like unbelievably hot. We were not indoors at all. No air conditioning.
We just sat behind the fans.
Luckily, I never pulled it off. Therefore, we never actually pulled it off. So,
I'm still waiting to do it someday.
It'll happen.
I should have done it. I did a game in Urbana yesterday. It was cold enough for it.
It's the perfect time to
do it.
I'm
sure our buddy Ed Willoughby would have done it.
He might have.
He's a Brit. He's got some tweed on.
He has to, in that
closet.
He has to. My winner, I'm going to give this to someone you would never, ever expect me to give a winner to.
Ted?
Not Ted, but close. Tim Sherwood.
Okay, yeah. What is he doing?
He is now the technical director at Swindon Town, League One Swindon Town.
Technical, so he's not even the manager.
He's not the manager. Director. He is the man above the manager.
If you will.
Depending on that. Why this may even be a bigger coup.
It just means he gets fired second.
Yeah, potentially so. Why this may even be a bigger coup for Tim Sherwood, and why I'm willing to even give it to him as a wanker, as a winner, because otherwise I would almost want to give it to the chairman for giving it to him. I would want to give him a wanker for that. But the reason why is Tim Sherwood, Swindon Town is a heavy speculative hunting target right now for Red Bull to be the next Red Bull acquisition in European football. So he could have literally just walked into one of the best jobs in England, potentially. This has a very Notts County feel to it to me, so I know that this will actually happen. But hey, Tim Sherwood, I hate you, but kudos to you for potentially backing into a job that could be absolutely ludicrous.
You're a wanker.
My wanker? I'm going to go – I mentioned this that we were going to touch back on the Germany – San Marino, 8-0 blowout.
Yeah.
But I'm giving my wanker to Thomas Müller, the Germany star, who, by the way, didn't score any of those 8 goals, complaining, saying these games, referring against these minnows, have nothing to do with professional football. I get your point, Thomas. I get it.
And some of those guys literally aren't professional players.
Yes. I get it. You could get hurt. It's meaningless. There's really it's just a win before you even go into the match.
Yeah, some club bouncer goes studs up on you.
But at the same time, and we saw someone from the San Marino FA respond. I can't remember specifically who it was, but they went on to say that the image rights from this match alone are going to be enough for them to build a brand new football pitch in a remote area of San Marino. To help develop further players. Well, most of it is, but a more remote area of San Marino. That they, will be able to use this match single-handedly to fund entire youth national team, yearly budgets. So I think I understand what Mr. Mueller is getting at here. But at the same time, he needs to look at the bigger picture and understand that sometimes there's a little bit more to the game than just the actual competition side of all of it.
Yeah, no, I get that.
Your wanker.
My wanker, we talked about it, NASL championship or whatever game. It's soccer ball. Was on Saturday night and, or excuse me, Sunday night. And I didn't get to watch it because it was on CBS Sports Network. That in 2016 is barely available online. Their streaming partners are Cox Cable.
Mm-hmm.
Heard of it.
Okay.
Optimum Cable.
Never heard of that.
Have not heard of that one. Frontier Cable. I think I've heard of that.
Heard of it.
And then a cable network called WOW? WOW Cable.
WOW Cable.
Those are the four. WOW Notice how I didn't say Time Warner, DirecTV, Comcast.
None of those major players.
No.
So it was unless you had CBS Sports Network, which not a ton of carriers carry.
Not huge availability.
You weren't watching this match.
You were not watching this match. The premier match of their entire season, their championship game. We talked about how important it was for the USL and the NWSL to have good showings when their matches were on national television. But hey, guess what? Theirs were actually on channels that people have heard of.
Yes.
CBS Sports Network that I didn't really know much about. And then I found out I couldn't even watch it. Because again, Frontier, Cox, Optimum, and you guessed it, WOW.
If you are a subscriber of WOW Cable, yes, we want to hear about WOW Cable. I bet it's amazing. It's probably
free HBO.
Yeah, it's probably like a really badass version of like Google Fiber or something.
I mean, look at their logo. Look how awful their logo
is. Oh my God, it is WOW.
It's like straight out of the 90s.
It is 90s clip art. Think of the word art that you can do in Microsoft Word where you can do like one with a rainbow, one with like a heavy dark outline on a yellow text. It's that one. It's the yellow text with a heavy dark outline.
Yeah. Those are your options. Way to go.
Nationally televised. It's pretty much the same thing. So that brings us to the end of this week's podcast. As always, thanks very much to everyone who's listened in to this point. If you want to get involved in the show in the future, please do so. You can get a hold of us at contact@wrongsideofthepond.com via email. You can get Jeremy at Jeremy Lance on Twitter. You can find me at wrongsideofpond on the Twitters as well. So you got lots of different options if you want to get a hold of us. We, of course, want to talk about whatever you want to talk about. Until next week, Jeremy, it's been fun.
Bye. I wish I lived in America. Wanna raise my kids in America. Heard everybody rich, all I gotta do is run, jump, kick. I'm a hit in your area. So please pick me, America. I know you probably never loved me. You never hear about me on the news. And you probably never been to my country. I hear you selling education. And got clothes that you throw away. Got plenty food in your nation. I can tell cause a lot of y'all are overweight. I already work for y'all. I'm in the sweatshops making these shirts for y'all. Now I ain't getting money. Go to bed hungry. But I make some exports for y'all. Y'all don't know a thing about that. You was made in America. I'm trying to find me a ticket where the sky is the limit. Catch a plane to America. Before we leave, of course, we again need to give a shout out to our friends at Tavor.
Tavor is the craft beer pioneer everyone's talking about. This innovative service helps independent craft breweries connect with thirsty craft beer fans from all across the country. Every day, you'll learn about fresh, dynamic beers that you can't find anywhere else.
You'll discover the beer's story, history, all sorts of entertaining and trivia-based tidbits that will turn you into a beer connoisseur in no time. Join Tavor for free by visiting tavor.com and entering your email address. When your monthly shipment of beers arrive right at your doorstep, you'll turn your home into the best tap bar around.
So make sure you visit Tavor, TAVOUR.com, and make sure to enter a special promo code just for Wrong Side of the Pond listeners, Wrong Side 10. It'll net you $10 off your first order of $25 or more.